Golden West Radio Network presents Crisis.
My dear Edna, I am writing this in my room at the Cortland Hotel to assure you that I'm still alive, still in possession of my senses, and still completely fascinated with my experiences here in New York City. New York City. How the very name of it thrills me. Your telephone message was waiting for me when I came in just now. Sister dear, you really mustn't waste your money on long-distance phone calls. I know you are troubled that I've asked you to mail me the money from my savings account, but I want to put your fears to rest. I am perfectly safe. I know exactly what I'm doing and in no danger whatsoever. I shall explain my need for this money in another letter very soon. In the meantime, please humor your older sister and dispatch the $12,000 immediately, care of this hotel. I am feeling well, the weather is ideal, and I shall be back with you in Colorado within 2 weeks, I promise you. Try not to worry and give my regards to Mr. Barton at the bank. All my love, Grace.
It never makes the headlines on page one, but it is a tragic fact that New York City claims thousands of crime victims every year. Victims not of violence, but of greed. Grace Phillips, like so many other hopefuls, has come to New York from a small community far away, come to see the sights, to do the town. Her plan was to spend 3 weeks of her summer vacation doing the museums and galleries to enrich her elementary school students back in her tiny Colorado town. She'd been a teacher for nearly 30 years, but the closest she'd ever been to the art and historical treasures of New York were the textbooks that told about them. But now, in her 50th year, Grace was fulfilling an ambition she'd carefully nourished throughout her career. Every day that first week in New York, she spent at the Guggenheim, or the Metropolitan Museum of Art, or the American Museum of Natural History. But that left the evenings, and that's where Grace was to have her encounter. I'll be back in a minute, as Crisis tonight offers a suspenseful tale of artful deception titled The Pigeon.
My dear Sister Edna, it all began on my first Friday in New York. I spent the day completely absorbed in the Metropolitan's pre-Columbian section, taking notes and gathering literature. And when they closed, I had to find some place to eat dinner. Cab driver mentioned a small cafe not far from my hotel, a lovely little place called Henry's. The colors were all dark reds and blues, and the carpets must have been 3 inches thick. But it was snug and, well, sort of intimate. I didn't have to ask about the prices. Everything in New York City is ridiculous, but, well, it was a once-in-a-lifetime experience. I gave the maitre d' a $5 bill to find me a quiet little corner all by myself where I could sit and watch the other guests. After about 10 minutes, he beckoned to me and showed me a table in a dark corner.
Will this be satisfactory, madame?
Oh, yes, fine.
You're dining alone?
Yes, I'm alone.
Ah, very good, madame. Bon appétit.
Well, I wish you could have seen the menu. Veal cordon bleu, oysters Rockefeller, rack of lamb. And all I really wanted was just a few vegetables, maybe a salad. And then suddenly, the maitre d' was back again, standing beside my chair.
Excuse me, madame.
Yes?
I'm terribly sorry.
Well, what is it?
I'm afraid there's been a mistake. My mistake. I'm not the regular man. The regular maitre d' is sick, and I'm taking his place.
Well, I'm sorry he's sick, but what seems to be the trouble?
I can't let you have this table.
What?
I didn't realize it, but the table is reserved for another party.
Oh, well, if that's all that's bothering you, find me another one. I don't care.
I'm so sorry.
Here, just a minute.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Atwood. It was my mistake. But the lady will be moved to another
table. The lady will stay right where she's sitting.
Well, I don't mind at all, really.
Well, I do. This isn't my table. I just usually eat here. I don't have an option on it.
I told her, Mr. Atwood...
Really, it's all right. Just find me something else.
I won't hear of it.
But you see, Mr. Atwood, we don't have another single anywhere tonight.
Well, Hugo, you've really put us both in a spot, haven't you?
I'm terribly sorry,
sir. Oh, for heaven's sake. Look, I'll just leave. That'll settle the whole thing.
My dear lady, were you alone?
What?
Here at the table. Were you going to eat alone?
Well, yes. Yes, I was.
And so was I. Not by choice, but by habit. Would it be too presumptuous of me to suggest that we share this little table?
Well, I suppose that would be one way to solve it.
Wonderful. Hugo, get a chair and another place setting.
Oh, yes, sir. Right away. And I'm terribly, terribly sorry, sir.
Well, they brought another chair, and he sat down facing me. His name was Kent Atwood. He was tall, over 6 feet. He had a shock of white hair and a tanned, rugged face. His build was, well, I suppose you'd say he was the tennis type. Gradually, the maitre d' assembled a place setting for him and brought a new candle centerpiece for the table. Poor Maitre D was still apologizing when Mr. Atwood quietly slipped him some money. It must have been a big bill. Hugo nearly melted when he saw it. Finally, we gave our orders, and Mr. Atwood sat back in his chair. He smiled at me. A kind sort of smile.
So, you're from Colorado. Oh, marvelous country.
Yes, it is.
And it's Miss Phillips?
That's right.
Well, what brings you to New York?
The museums. I teach sixth grade.
Ah.
I receive credit for seeing the exhibits. But I've made the trip, credit or no.
You're having a good time of it, then?
Marvelous.
Oh, where have you been?
The Metropolitan Museum.
Oh, yes, yes. And?
Well, that's all I've done. But this is only my first week.
Oh, I see. And how long do you plan to stay, then?
I have 3 weeks.
Well, no doubt you'll be seeing the Guggenheim and the Museum of Natural History. Oh, and there's one a lot of people miss. The Cloisters. Have you ever heard of it?
No.
Medieval art. Fabulous place. It's at Fort Tryon Park. You know where that is?
No.
Well, I'll get you some directions.
Mr. Atwood, you're probably much too busy to bother with an itinerant schoolmarm from the back country.
Well, by heaven, I hope I never get that busy.
You apparently eat here regularly.
Oh, it becomes a habit. Well, actually, it's a very good restaurant.
And I take it you're a very good customer.
Well, they try to make me feel at home. Sometimes they go a little too far, this table business tonight.
Well, I do feel like an intruder.
My dear Miss Phillips, you're not intruding. In fact, this is the nicest surprise I've had all day.
He ordered wine, toasted my health. And by the time our dinners arrived, I found out that he was 60 years old, a widower, and a Wall Street investment counselor.
Well, how do you rate Henry's food?
Compared to the Addison Lodge?
Where's that? In Denver?
Addison. That's the town I come from.
Oh.
And I'll have you know the Addison Lodge is the best place to eat in the whole town. But they'd have to go some to equal this.
Oh, that's good. Well, now, what do you have on for tonight?
For tonight?
Oh, the museums are closed.
Oh, Well, I thought I'd go back to my room and watch television. Maybe read a little. Oh, and I took pages of notes on the exhibits. I have to get them in order.
Pardon me, but it sounds a little dreary.
Does it? Yes, I guess it does, at that.
If I'd known I was going to have the pleasure, I'd have gotten some tickets. There must be one play that doesn't shout four-letter words at you all night long.
Well, you're a playgoer.
Well, no, not anymore. Not since Jan passed away. Oh, I take a client every now and then. Not often.
I should think, being right here in the heart of it all, that
you'd be... Miss Phillips, I'm 60 years old. I hail from a culture, a time, a sense of behavior that these young tigers know nothing about. Look, you're a lot more familiar with today's literature than I am. I'm completely alienated from the popular culture of today. I don't want to read it or see it. I don't go for their shock value, their...
Telling it like it is.
Yes. Why must the author and playwrights and movie people have to dwell on the rotten parts of human nature? Isn't there enough of that in real life? Well, I'll climb down off my soapbox.
Oh, I agree with everything you say.
You know what we are, Miss Phillips? We're a couple of anachronisms. Have you ever ridden a hansom cab through Central Park on a warm summer evening?
Good gracious,
come on,
no.
Come on.
Well,
Look, we anachronisms have to stick together.
My heavens, Kent, you certainly have let me ramble on. I've practically showed you my old snapshot album.
I've loved hearing it, Grace, about your sister Edna, your childhood, your teaching. Beautiful.
Now it's your turn.
Must I?
Not if you don't want to.
Well, it's not quite as happy a life as yours. Well, born in Missouri, father a farmer. Mother died when I was 8. Managed to get through the university. Dabbled in real estate. Got lucky. Got busy.
Got married.
Yes, that too.
Luckier there than I.
Yes, I was lucky. Jan was everything to me.
We don't have to talk about it. Tell me about your...
No, I want to tell you about it. Strange. You're the first person I've really wanted to talk to since 1969. That's when Jan passed away. Oh, well, what do you know? Right back where we started from.
Yes.
It's been a beautiful evening, Grace.
For me, too.
Well, I'll get us a cab and take you to your hotel.
Oh, you really don't have to bother.
I know I don't have to. I want to.
That's how our first evening ended. He drove me to the hotel, saw me to my door, offered his hand, looked at me for a moment with those blue, blue eyes, and then he turned and was gone. I must admit, I sat alone in my room for almost half an hour, thinking about him, wondering whether I'd ever see him again. And then, finally, I decided Kent Atwood was nothing but a pleasant accident, nothing more. I undressed and went to bed. But it was long past 2 a.m. before I slept. The next day, I had intended going back to the Metropolitan Museum, but I couldn't focus my mind on ancient art. Stood in front of my hotel trying to decide what to do. And suddenly it was all very simple. I would go to the Cloisters. And where was it? Fort Tryon Park. Kent had forgotten to tell me how to get there, but I found it was only a short taxi ride. Walking to the main entrance, the sun was in my eyes, and I didn't see him until he stepped quickly out of the shady entranceway. My heart literally skipped a beat. It was Kent.
Grace.
Kent, what are you doing here?
I'm waiting for you.
But how did you know I'd be coming here?
Well, I called your hotel room. There was no answer. I just had a hunch.
Well.
Grace, don't go to museums today.
What?
Come with me.
Where?
I don't know where. Anywhere. I have my car. Let's drive. Let's just drive.
Kent Atwood led me to an expensive black car at the edge of the park, and we drove in silence for several minutes. He looked upset. He clenched his hands on the wheel again and again. I tried to make small talk, but he only nodded or shook his head and forced a smile at times. Finally, we were out of Manhattan, and he pulled up and parked in a quiet residential street. Where are we, Kent?
Westchester County.
Oh?
The Hudson River is about a quarter mile over that way.
You had some special reason for bringing me here.
Yes, I guess I had. This is where I live.
Which? That immense house there?
Yes.
My.
But I'm not going to do it now. I was going to drive right up the drive and take you inside. But I'm not going to do that.
I don't believe I understand, Kent.
I know. I hardly understand myself. Grace, I discovered last night that I'm a lonely man. A terribly lonely man. My wife's death sort of closed all the windows in my life. I just went through the motions of living.
Did you have children?
No, that's it, you see. I was an only child. I'm absolutely alone in the world. I have no one to share with, no one to spend anything on, and...
Yes?
Well, no one to leave it to. And that is a problem I'm going to have to solve very soon.
Oh, can't you? As trim and tanned as you are?
Grace, I'm dying.
What?
Cancer. It's all through me. Totally inoperable.
Oh, Kenneth.
You've heard the commercials that say, don't ignore the warning signs. Well, I ignored them. I knew what I was doing. The only reason I went to a doctor was for some painkillers, and he confirmed what I already knew.
But why, Kent?
When I first began to suspect what I had, I thought, soon all my troubles will be over. Soon I'll be with Jan again. But it still leaves the problem of my estate. You see, Grace, I have no heirs, none at all. And I'm worth something in excess of $15 million, closer to 16, I suppose.
I've never known anyone who had that much money.
Last night I realized that I had bumped into someone who deserved to inherit a fortune. Someone with breeding, with mature judgment, with a humble, kind, well, decency about her. With old-fashioned values. Oh, I could endow schools and museums and set up a trust fund and all that, and maybe I will. But I want most of what's left after the taxes are paid to go to someone who's making a quiet, decent, legitimate contribution to the world. You are that person.
You don't even know me.
That's true. I don't know you. But I haven't much more time, Grace. Grace, I want you to marry me.
Marry you?
Yes, tonight. Today, as soon as you can.
Why,
it'll be all yours, Grace. And it won't be poured into the sewer or thrown around by some bunch of irresponsible young...
Kent, listen to me.
Hmm?
People don't get married to save a fortune. They marry for love. I'm flattered that you pitied my spinsterhood. And I'm sorry for your loneliness. But to rush into marriage with...
All right. How much time do you need? A week? Take a week. I'll still be up and around. Take 2 weeks. Only say you'll do it, Grace. Then, everything that's mine will be yours.
As improbable as it may seem, Kent and I continued talking about his plan, his proposal, if you can call it that, as we drove all over Westchester County. He enumerated his holdings, described his personal philosophies, and for my part, I suppose I opened up secret parts of my very conventional life that nobody, perhaps even you, Edna, ever knew. When it grew dark, he drove me back to my hotel. And I knew he expected some kind of answer.
Well, Grace?
Kent, give me 1 week.
1 week? All right.
I promise you I'll give you my answer by this time next week. Despite my feelings for Kent, I spent the next few days checking up on him. What I learned satisfied me completely. I was convinced the proposition was safe, and for my part, I was prepared to go to him with my agreement.
You're making me a very happy man, Grace.
But you really know so little about me. If we join our resources, how do you know I...
Perfectly simple, my dear. You merely transfer your savings into my account at Chase Manhattan Bank.
Oh?
Well, they're a fairly reputable institution. Oh, and of course, you're entitled to see my bank book. Of course, I have accounts in several different banks. In fact, to tell you what, when you have your savings here in New York to prove to me what you have, I'll match it with cash from my account. How's that?
Well, it's really not necessary.
Oh, but it is. For all you know, I'm nothing but a con man.
Well, all right, Kent. But all I have to my name is $12,000.
12? All right. I'll bring an equal amount with me as soon as your money arrives.
Well, that, of course, was why I asked you to send me my money. And I'm sure you've been wondering what happened after I received it. When Kent telephoned the night the money arrived, he suggested dining out at Henry's, where we met. but I had a slight headache, so I asked him if he would just come here up to my room in the hotel. At about 8 o'clock, he arrived.
I'm beginning to feel sheepish about this formality, Grace.
Well, you shouldn't. It's for our mutual satisfaction.
Well, yes, you're right, of course. You received the money?
Right here in this envelope.
Oh, that's pretty risky, carrying cash around.
Nobody knows I have it.
Well, here's $12,000 from my account. Shall I count it? It's in hundreds.
Oh, good heavens, Kent. Don't make me feel any worse than I already do. I'll take your word for it, dear.
You sure?
Of course. Unless you want to count mine.
Oh, I wouldn't think of it.
Well, here it is, anyway.
Fine. I've seen enough.
Now, what will you want to do?
Oh, I'll just take your money, put it with mine, and put it in the night deposit slot at the bank. It's right on my way.
That's funny. Hello? Yes, he's right here. It's for you.
For me? Hello? Yes? Yes, this is Kent Atwood.
Kent, I'm going to freshen up. I'll be right back.
Oh, yes, fine, Grace. Now, who is this, anyway?
The call was from the New York Police Bunkle Squad. I told them all about Kent Atwood, how I'd spent several days checking up on him, and I found out the car he drove was rented under another name. The house he said was his belonged to someone else. They even tied him in with Hugo, the head waiter at Henry's. So when Kent took the call, I stepped out of the room with all my money and his. The Chase Manhattan Bank tells me they don't have any account under the name of Kent Atwood. I asked them. Told them I wanted to make a deposit in his account. But since there is no such account, well, I have no choice but to put it in my own. So please deposit the enclosed cashier's check for $24,000 to my account at the bank. Will you, Edna? And say hello to Mr. Barton and tell him I'm having such a wonderful time in New York. Your loving sister, Grace.
Yes, when in New York City, beware the unscrupulous con artist. The most trustworthy types sometimes turn out to be something else. Yes, something else indeed. I'll be back with a preview of our next crisis radio drama in 1 minute. Tonight, Crisis presented Pat French, Paul Herlinger, and John Anandola in The Pigeon, with sound by Jeff Thompson and engineering by Carney Barton. Crisis is produced at Audio Recording Incorporated and is written and directed by Jim French, who now invites you back for next week's program and wishes you a good evening.